what if the first entrance into the conversation with the digital world was something that me at my best got to say to something at me at my most susceptible?
How does that play out in people's lives? People's relationships, their emotional life, ability to attend or focus their mind.
Phone use, I feel like, is the battleground that myself and a lot of people fight the war for their attention in their lives.
ClearSpace, the little tagline is, eliminate compulsive phone use forever.
There's a complete misalignment of their intention and attention. You go to respond to a text message, and maybe it's an urgent one, and then you end up getting dragged into a feed.
I don't think anybody, when they were developing technology, said, oh, here's a good way to diminish people's ability to make decisions. And yet, that's what we find going on.
Have you ever felt that you needed the time and space to let your soul catch up with your body?
I'm not even going to ask who you were quoting and all of that stuff.
Figure out what the right way to occupy the digital spaces that we all exist in are. And every time you make an investment in that, you're kind of moving the needle for the entire tribe.
Yeah, don't say anything interesting yet, because we're not recording yet. So, yeah. Are we going to record now? Hang on. Here we go.
This is, we're passing.
Hey, become new. We're now recording. I'm on with Royce Branning, and we just started talking and it started getting interesting. So we thought we got to record now. We may cut this, that we may not.
Okay. But, okay. That was going to be the question I was going to say before we actually just hit the record button, which is, does this get edited? And so if I say something wrong, should we go back?
This can totally get edited. Try not to say any bad words, but you know, I have Nancy on a regular basis, so our folks are real used to that, so it's not a problem. But just so everybody knows, in case we do put all this footage in here, this is Royce Branning. We're doing a series called You Should Get Out More. By the way, You Should Get Out More. We're looking at how do you navigate technology and spirituality, spiritual life, spiritual growth. Especially for parents with kids or any of us that have anybody younger in our life, but for all of us personally too, teach us to number our days so that we might gain a heart of wisdom, the psalmist says. And Royce is doing really, really interesting things in the world of technology, but I just want to catch up for a minute. So he and his family, our friends, used to be connected in the church that I was at Menlo Park. Royce, you have a wife and a 10-month-old now mobile daughter named Harper.
Yep.
And you were going to say something, so now go ahead and say it.
Well, okay. So you were giving me the tee up in the background, but the context I was going to give you is I've been on the beat of become new for since some of the first origin story ones, and I just feel like there's no other place to get rolling on this. When we were talking right before we jumped in here, other than the fact that, like, boom, this guy right here. No. I don't know if this is how you go, and I don't know if I'm taking it, but, the two pages I have bookmarked in this book, talk about the command to, okay, get this. Sorry if I'm hijacking this, but set and take captive are active verbs, implying that you have a role in determining where your soul rests. Okay. And then bookmark two. Have you ever felt that you needed the time and space to let your soul catch up with your body? Set and clear are both commands. The name of my company is ClearSpace. Set is a command. And space is what you need to let your soul catch up with your body. And I am confident that those two words osmosis into the formation of this company.
Well, I'm not even going to ask who you were quoting and all of that stuff, but this is so cool. I'm so glad to get to chat with you. Known your folks for a long time, but we haven't had this chance. So let me just explain, everybody, as you're watching, why I asked Royce if he'd be willing to talk and why I'm so excited. He's doing work. If you're watching this right now, you can see San Francisco behind Royce. So he's kind of in the heart of the technological center of the universe and started a company that is literally helping people who are dealing with navigating technology and trying to find a flourishing way to live. In fact, I was looking online Royce, ClearSpace, the little tagline is eliminate compulsive phone use forever. So we're talking now about how do we use technology in good ways, but not get chewed up by it. So let's start there. What is compulsive phone use? Yeah, let's just start there. What is compulsive phone use?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. Phone use, I feel like, is the kind of battleground that myself and a lot of people fight the war for their attention in their lives. Like, it's maybe the foremost battleground. And I think that there is addiction is a word that gets thrown around a lot. And I think people tend to identify how they relate to their phone as being addicted. That's like a lot of the people we talk to would say addiction. I think compulsion feels like a little bit of a softer word as they're still firming up around what addiction versus compulsion looks like. But compulsive phone use, I'd articulate it as you finding yourself reaching for your phone in moments where there wasn't an intent, there's not an intent behind that action. Or you go with an intent to your phone and then you drift into something that was never internally motivated as the end state of where you wanted to be. You go to respond to a text message and maybe it's an urgent one. You go to take care of something useful. You go to use the utility and then you end up getting dragged into a feed or watching videos or anything that it is. And the experience that many people have in their digital environment is that there's a complete misalignment of their intention and attention. And we're trying to reconcile like where those things depart from each other.
And Royce, how does that play out in people's lives? How do you find it affects people's relationships or their emotional life, their ability to attend or focus their mind? What's the impact of that?
I mean, I think that it's dramatic. I think we gather a lot of anecdotes. We talk to users every day and we have a tool that helps them. And I have my personal story and I have the stories I hear from them, but maybe your background might be more suited to speak to the official capacity of some of this stuff. But I mean, I think that people lose primarily the capacity for empathy and creativity and deep relationship when they are checking their phones constantly.
I'll get in a minute to how ClearSpace works, but I love, I was reading about a little experiment you guys ran where I think it was the Y Combinator. It's like an incubator for entrepreneurs, had a gathering, 150. Yeah. So these are like 150 young tech entrepreneurs, and you guys invited them to give up their phones for one night.
Do you remember
that? It was a couple of years ago. And kind of how that worked and what did people say about why they would or what happened or why they wouldn't?
Yeah, it was great. So we ran a phone check, kind of a remix of the coat check. And my co-founder and I threw on some oversized thrift store jackets and set up a table at the front of the event. So we participated in the winter 2023 Y Combinator batch, and it's a great program. And every Thursday night, they have a gathering of all the founders in the current batch, about 200. And we didn't actually ask anyone's permission, but we just put a table right out in front of it. And we knew everyone would be gathering there. And we put up a big sign and we said, phone check. And, you know, asked people on their way in, hey, would you like to enjoy a phone-free night? And most people were like, what do you mean by that? And we're like, well, we'll take your phone from you. And then you don't have to worry about it distracting you from these great conversations and this fun environment that you have. And most people are like, oh, okay, good. I have no idea what you're doing. But our appeal was kind of like, hey, by the way, before you just shrug it off and say no, or you say, I don't need that, which is tends to be a pretty quick reflex. Like, oh, I'm not one of those people. I don't need that. We'd say, totally. You definitely don't need it. We're going to be running a raffle. And so if you do give us your phone, like the default behavior, if you give us your phone, we're going to enter you in this raffle to win this cool vintage typewriter or this cool poster. So if you don't need it and you're not going to be checking your phone while you're here to socialize with other founders and people of this nature, you should probably just give it to us and then you might win a thing. And so it kind of shifted the inertia for the people that we could get to stop. And then we got to kind of like the heart of the issue for a lot of people where you'd have a number of them go, I'm actually expecting a really important call. and like, I can't get away from my phone tonight. Mm-hmm. A lot of the people were fundraising. They're like, no, I'm closing a funding round for my company. This thing is, I need to be responsible. Like, totally cool. Or we had one, so he's like, I think my girlfriend's going to break up with me tonight, so I need to have my phone on me.
And
we
were don't like, want to miss that call. Yeah.
It sounds like you don't want that to happen. Yeah. And we, there's, you know, there's a simple, we could delay it a little bit maybe. And then there was like moments of reckoning where people kind of paused and they hesitated. And there's all different types of questions swirling around about trust and like, wait, are you going to take this? And we're like, hey, look, we're inside of a trust community. Like we're going to get you your phone back, all this stuff. And there's moments where people are like, all right. And they'd come back at the end of the night. One other thing we'd do actually, we'd give them a little sticker that was like phone free. Huh. And the coolest thing we heard was they're like, I connected with all the other phone free people. It was like this little like, hey, we're
wow.
Oh, you want a phone for like, isn't that kind of weird?
Like a 12-step community for people with phones.
Yeah. So we ran this little experiment and it surfaced a ton of interesting fun aspects. We actually had a ton of requests come from people after that for us to run phone checks at their events. We're better at software than we are at like logistically facilitating phone checks at events, but it was kind of a cool moment to capture like the heart of the issue that we're trying to solve with software.
So tell us a bit about ClearSpace, and just to let everybody know, we don't do ads on Become New, so this is not like product placement. It's just this is what you do is so related to the journey that we're trying to help people navigate. I thought I would love for us to be able to learn about you. How does ClearSpace work? How do you help free people from compulsive phone use? And how did it get started? What's the origin story?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in the most practical sense, our main product today is an iPhone app that intervenes in compulsive app opens. So what we do is we give people the ability to identify which apps on their phone they feel like they spend too much time on or they open too frequently throughout the day.
For example, are there some that would be?
Yeah, Instagram's the number one. It might be worth mentioning and be interesting. Most of our users are millennials. So yep. I'm 29. It's like those of us who are digital natives and grew up with these devices in the digital realm.
Yep.
And we're kind of coming to figure out that as adults, that's compromising what we think it means to live a flourishing life. So Instagram would be a really popular one, TikTok. But we have a ton of people that use LinkedIn or email. And the idea is that you start with a misalignment of your intention and attention. So LinkedIn might be a really good, it's like a more interesting one because it's a work one. It might be a really good tool during your workday to like look for people that you might be working with or hiring or apply for a job or something. But in the evenings, it might be something that's taking you away from the dinner table or from focusing on a book or whatever you like to do. But the same is true for Instagram, actually, increasingly so, right? Like a lot of people's jobs actually hinge on their ability to be maybe producing content or consuming content that's useful for education purposes or otherwise. And what we do is we help like allow users to insert a moment of cognitive friction between themselves and what has become probably an addictive habit loop or a compulsive habit loop.
I love that. Insert a moment of cognitive friction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this started with just a deep breath. I'm a software engineer by background and I can give you a little bit more of my personal story into it and everything, but to wrap it up, like I figured out a way on the iPhone to, basically automatically redirect when I was opening, apps on my phone throughout the day and redirect it to a 15-second breathing exercise. And then at the end of it, just ask, like, do you want to continue or not? And you just make a decision. And then you set how much time you want to be on the app afterwards. So you make an intentional decision about going, an intentional decision about how long you want to spend in the app. That was kind of the ground zero of the app. Today, we support a whole number of different types of cognitive friction. So we allow, again, not an ad, but I think it's actually a fun one, physical exercise. So we trained a machine learning model, put it on device. And for a lot of our users that want to be also improving their fitness while decreasing their screen time.
Yes.
you can do push-ups or squats to earn the number of minutes that you're going to spend on the app afterwards.
No kidding.
So we have a machine learning model in the camera, and you actually have to like set it up, and it's hilarious. Like our users tell us all the time, like, I was in the front of a line at a concert, and I had to open my email app, which I have locked out, and I had to hit the deck in front of everybody and start doing push-ups so that they could get verified and
so they could get into the venue in order to open the thing up so they could show the ticket they had to do push-ups.
So it's inconvenient at times, but for us and for the people that use it, it's become a way for them to reclaim control over a relationship that they've always been out of control with, and set up the rules to the game of their device the way that they kind of believe they should be set up.
Wow. And where did the idea come from? What was your own experience of technology as you were growing up? How old were you when the smartphone came out, and to what extent did that kind of impact you? Because I know for researchers who write in that area, that was kind of a Rubicon dividing line when that happened. So what was your own journey with that?
I can't recall how old I was when the iPhone came out, but I'm born in 96. So I very much grew up in the context of social media and smartphones.
Yeah.
You know, I got one when I was in eighth or ninth grade, I believe. And I actually am super appreciative for the context that I was raised in around screens. Mm-hmm. It's actually a common experience between my co-founder and I. We were both in households that had pretty strict limitations, definitely on the TV.
I know your folks, and your dad was a basketball player for Notre Dame back in the day, so he would have had a lot of discipline built into him on lots of different levels.
Yeah, totally. And we also, there was priorities placed on other things, on sports, getting outside, relationships. And so there was kind of some better yeses to attend to than the phone. But I actually think that one of the key elements is, like, I'm not sure that my parents or anyone's parents for that matter kind of knew what was going on with the phones. And as kids, I don't think we really fully knew either.
Yes.
Like, we had really good rules and habits around, like, how much TV you can watch. But it was unclear what the smartphone was doing, and, like, can it be in the room at bedtime and all these things. And so I think that the actual, like, real instructive motion of kind of my coming of age years around technology is watching in middle school as, like really the experience that people used to hang out after school and play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden that shifted to, like, all right, are you in the Call of Duty lobby? Like, are you online gaming together?
Yes.
And then, you know, maybe it was people going downtown to get lunch after school. And then it was like, okay, but the meetup spot is on Snapchat now, so you better have Snapchat. Mm. And like the conversations and the topics and how people are getting together, everything just kind of moved into the digital world. And the feeds weren't actually that crazy then, but then the feeds arrived. And all of a sudden it was kind of like, huh, this is a little bit more the place to get belonging and relationship than the real life experiences. And so I think that was kind of like something that myself, my co-founder Oliver, that we feel like we like lived through, was this kind of like relocating of our lives.
Oh, it's great language. Realm. I love what you said too about that idea of finding the better yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Say a little more about that.
I don't know. I came in hot with telling you a little bit about Truly, the language from the words that you spoke at Menlo when I was growing up. And a number of other, I think, frankly, words of, I don't know. I don't know if prophetic is a good word, but like,
it's just spiritual wisdom.
Yeah. Spiritual wisdom around, like what was being compromised in real time, by the internet's encroachment into, kind of the patterns of life. Like, we kind of live, like, kind of walked across this threshold of like maybe even just like a minority to a majority of life was getting lived out, it seemed like, in the real world, and then all of a sudden in the digital world. Mm-hmm. And it felt like there's a snapshot of like, oh, this is what we just lost. Does nobody just hangs around anymore and figures out what to do? Like, we have to be on here messaging each other. And if you want to be messaging each other, you should have a good streak so that people know that you have other friends, that you're hanging out. Like, all these dynamics were kind of starting to happen in the social realm.
Yes.
And to get to the better, yes, this was other wisdom that I received at in a community I was a part of when I was at school at Notre Dame, South Bend City Church. Talked about Pastor Jason Miller talked about you have to say the necessary no's to say the better yeses in your life. And it's latent in all sorts of the constraints to let good things run wild type stuff. And I don't know if that's too hard of a pivot, but like truly, when I think about the problem we're solving and what we're kind of trying to do, it's really just trying to build an interface for humans to engage with the digital world in a way that like gives them a credible way to create the type of structures that they want to live inside of.
I was actually thinking as you were talking in Romans 12, it's kind of classic statement from Paul where he talks about presenting your body a living sacrifice. Yeah. And of course, screens are something that we do with our bodies or sometimes abstain from doing with our bodies. And then he says, don't let, one translation, the world squeeze you into its mold. Don't be conformed, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so looking for what are ways where I can avoid just being squeezed into or conformed to whatever's going on around me. And I was thinking, I had breakfast yesterday with my friend Kent, also a great basketball player. A terrific leader in education. He was a superintendent of schools, and he was the superintendent of the year for the state of California not too long ago. A point that he made I'd never thought about before has to do with decision-making and what he sees as a loss of our ability to make decisions because we're connected all the time. Mm. So he said when he was starting out as an assistant principal, if the principal is gone, the principal's gone. So there's a problem on campus. He's the assistant principal. He's the man. He's got to make the decision. Now he can just text the principal wherever the principal is. And so there's kind of an abdication of agency. And even when it comes to decision making, in a strange way, that constant universal connectedness can actually thwart our development a bit because it's easier to just say, okay, you make the decision and pass that on up the chain. And I don't think anybody, when they were developing technology, said, oh, here's a good way to diminish people's ability to make decisions. And yet that's what we find going on.
Right. Totally. I mean, it matters who you, like, the only thing I can lean on for like enduring through line through this is like, if you believe it matters who you become and that the challenges and the friction and the discomfort of your experience is actually producing within you something that's expanding, then you might welcome parts of it. And I think that's like, if not a design principle, like a layer beneath this is like, and here's the cool thing, John, this is like my optimism around what I think is actually a massive movement that we're not facilitating. We're not motivating this. Mm-hmm. We're receiving, I think, an utterance of the cultural consciousness right now, which is like, people are actually like, wait, I've seen myself get diminished the more I use these devices.
Oh, yes.
And the people around me, this is the one that gets them. And by gets them, I mean, it lands. Like when you try to land, it's, don't you know someone who over the last couple of years, the lights feel like they went out? And it's because they're staring at their phones.
Yes.
And don't you feel like just a little bit of discomfort around that, a little bit of accountability? Don't you feel like we could steer that back into a place where, yes, it feels great to lay on my couch at the end of the day and scroll TikTok. It just feels great. But I don't want that for me. And yes. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for the spaces that we occupy. And I think that's the thing that everyone's kind of waking up to right now.
Yep. So the hunger, the interest, the desire to be a better person. It's kind of a universal thing and it's out there. And what you're doing is just kind of tapping into it, but you're not creating that hunger. That's there. Totally. What's the response been so far? Tell me a little bit about since it's been going. How do people respond? Do they just think this is the dumbest thing in the world or can't wait? Or what? How's that working out?
No, we don't listen. We don't listen to those people. It's going great. I mean, we have hundreds of thousands of users.
Of thousands of users.
Yeah. Yeah. This, wow. There was early. Yeah. Maybe I skipped this, but so the way this whole thing got started is, I was working remote during the pandemic. My job is a software engineer and I found myself, continuously like checking my phone throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And that was turning into these long scrolling sessions. I think something around the loss of like spatial accountability with coworkers and everything. Like I just saw myself steadily creeping into a habit where my screen time was 8, 9, 10 hours a day. And I really came to reckon with the fact, and this, I named it as like, I think I'm addicted to this thing in a way that was categorically new, for, my life. And I really, it began to bother me. And so I wanted to do something about it. And I definitely looked into a lot of the head stuff that I could do around this in terms of just like reading about habit change and listening to the neuroscience, but also the spiritual practices and all these things. And I think there's good things that took place in the context of that. But really what ended up working for me was I just decided to hack my environment back.
That's great.
So like that, like that's so good. I was like, yeah, the rules of this game and every platform that I exist in are set up to optimize me along the vector of attention. Mm-hmm. And that's not what I'm optimizing for. And these are bits that are programmable by me, just like they're programmable by them. And so shoot, man, I get the first step in this conversation too, yep, by the way, because on my device, I can modify my network config. I can modify the files that serve me web pages and I can redirect. So a lot of the journey of what we've done is we've said, what if the first entrance into the conversation with the digital world was something that me at my best got to say to something at me at my most susceptible? And like, what if it was like, hey, before I log on, before I log on, like, what if I had to just get a quick reminder of what my goals for this week were?
Yeah.
Or what if I knew that somebody I loved and cared about was going to see my screen time stats for the week? And like, maybe that does something for me. And so we kind of started building what I think is actually like a more appropriate entrance into the digital world. We call it an intentionality layer.
I love the intentionality language. I love that thought of take a step backwards so me at my best can say something to me at my worst.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because there is vibrant, alive, vital me, and there is escapist, lay on the couch, me not at my best. And so I love that thought. Part of what strikes me when you're talking, I have mentioned, and we'll talk through this series to everybody who's listening, about the core educational formation text in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 6:4, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, him so you love. And then it goes on to say, write these words down, put them on your wrists and your forehead, put them on the gate and the door frame of your house. And the idea is arrange the space in your life, design it so that it reminds you of what matters most so you can align with it. And really, you're just doing the Deuteronomy 6 thing all over again, but in a technological age.
Yes, we are not doing anything. Yes, we in the breathe screen, this is just like, yes, this is an act. This company is an act of translation. I try to point, I mean, I know I grabbed your book, but like there's so many books that I could pull off the shelf that are wrought with deep spiritual wisdom. And if we were doing nothing else, we're translating what we would hope to do. And it takes usually decades to cultivate generational wisdom along these types of new vectors.
Mm-hmm.
And really like the heart of what we're doing is saying, okay, software is moving really fast. AI is moving even faster. what does it look like to subvert kind of a system that's increasingly, you're increasingly out leveraged in with like a primitive that allows you, like you want to attach to this machine. I can unpack this a little bit, but you want to attach to this like a primitive that says I and you, and it seems like everyone cares about what the digital world is doing to us. And we also might recognize that it's not a force that we can like diametrically oppose. It actually might be something we have to dance with.
Yes.
And the write it on the doorpost. This is like, I can't come up with this stuff. Like mm-hmm. We in our breathe screen, the final thing before you make the decision whether you're going to go or not go is a quotation. And people, so you want language to inspire, like in that moment. So it animates in, and we have some out the box that are a collection of different pieces of wisdom that have inspired me or my co-founder, but people can edit these. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of users we talk to, they're like, I just load in Bible verses here.
Yeah.
And like, what is the last word that you want said before you're about to make a decision? It's digital environment curation for sure.
No, in reading about this, I was reading the shift in our society, for example, around smoking, and that it used to be 40% of the population smoked. Yeah. Now it's down to 12%. And here, I mean, I think you're exactly right. It's not and shouldn't be about abstention or abstinence. It's about moderation. Another question, just follow up on what you were saying. It's kind of fascinating to me because we'll talk a lot and become about community, the need for other people. In AA, they say, I get drunk, but we get sober. The gift of community and accountability. You were saying one of the things that you'll do with people is people will be able to let their online stats info be known by somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one of the most impactful levers for success outcomes that we've observed in the user base. So success outcomes, I mean, screen time reduction and daily budget adherence are kind of our two North Stars. So people set up when
your two North Stars, screen time reduction.
Yeah, total screen time reduction.
Yep.
And then daily budget adherence.
Daily budget adherence.
So when somebody gets onto the application, they set a budget for how many times a day they would ideally open a given app. And so, you know, mine might be Instagram for 3 opens a day. And a cool journey along that is like you end up realizing that you're really opening this app like 30 or 40 times a day if
right.
you're kind of an average person, right?
Right.
And you're like, whoa, I was totally off base. Like I thought 3 was a fair budget. It's like, no, like not to the bottom of your brainstem. And so budget adherence is like, do people stay inside of that budget that they set for themselves every single day? And of course we're helping them out. We're giving them some cognitive friction. We're giving them accountability. But the thing that we discovered, and we did not set out with the intention, you know, to build, a social application, and we're not a social app. We're not, you know, social media by any means, but we came to understand, we gave people a utility that allowed them to curate this digital environment with cognitive friction. And they started telling us that like, and we talk to our users every day. There's a button in the app where you can call my phone or my co-founder's phone. And we talk to them every day and they're like, hey, like we kept hearing that they're in this journey together with one or two other close friends, kind of like Dunbar's number, like it's one or two people. It's a sibling. It's a friend. It's a spouse. And so we're like, well, what does that look like? They're like, well, I screenshot my screen time. I send it to them. And sometimes I forget. And you're like, well, you know, we can actually like, we can give that to you by default. So the thing that we do in a feature called Friends is, you know, you have a handful of people that maybe you're kind of running this screen time reduction journey with, and your typical breathe screen, when you start the day, your first open of the day is actually a report on the other person's that you're invited to react to, but it doesn't ping them. It doesn't draw them in. Yeah. The next time they go to open their social app, they'll get a message from you like, hey, keep up the good work, or like, let's bounce back today.
Yeah.
And so it's this kind of asynchronous communication. And once somebody has a friend or a running mate in ClearSpace, you see an immediate bump in these North Star metrics.
It's a brilliant idea and it's fascinating. And it makes total sense to me that one would be kind of a game changer for most people.
Yeah. And it's a thread that we're continuing to pull at. And we're not reinventing the wheel here. We're just looking at like, what does it mean for people and their communities and their friends to carry a story. And we think that story right now is correcting the misalignment of attention and intention. You know, that is
Proverbs, iron sharpens iron.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One more question. Tell me a little bit about, you're married and now you have a daughter who is 10 months old. So you're just on the early edge of parenting in a world of screens. How is this journey impacting your life as a husband and now more and more as a dad?
Yeah, it, impacting a lot. I think the the impact as a dad is, I'm also an uncle to a number of nieces and nephews who are a little bit closer to the age where they're officially them or their friends are getting iPads, mm-hmm. and these problems are starting to pop up. And really that's giving me imagination for the timer. I'm like, all right, Harper, my daughter, she's gonna come online one of mm-hmm. these days.
Yep.
And what is her arrival to the digital world gonna look like? Mm. I don't know if you've read Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt. Yeah, you got it. Of course you have.
Got it right here, baby. This
that's right.
Part of what we'll be talking about a fair amount. Yeah.
Good. It's phenomenal. But he talks about sending Gen Z to Mars, right? That's like the opening picture is like we sent them to Mars. And I'm either the last millennial or the first Gen Z. My co-founder's a year younger. He's definitely the first Gen Z. I straddle that line, Zillennial. We're terraforming Mars. We're terraforming the digital world.
Wow.
And so I've got a seven, depending on how long we can hold Harper off the screens. And I don't know what the world's going to look like in 7 years and what that's going to be. And honestly, I also don't think it's just the screens. I think there's a wider apparatus
yes.
of engagement that's going to be very consequential, but the screens are a really tangible place for us to talk about and start. And I do know that there is a way that people will probably need to exist online that currently does not feel safe for her to arrive at. And we are executing against a mission whereby, you know, she could land online in the appropriate amount of security that a child should. And we're learning how to do that by we're not a kids app. Like I'll just out the gate. Like we're learning to do that by figuring out what it means for ourselves to live healthily in these yep. environments. And we think that that as individuals who have seen both sides come to terraform the space, that it might be safe for the communities we exist in and the next generation coming up.
Yeah, that I was so struck by the thesis Jonathan Hutt writes in that book, which is we overprotect our children mm-hmm. in the real world and we underprotect them in the online world.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. That the another thread of like optimism and hope I have around this is, and I actually really like technology, and I think there's so many cool, amazing things that it does, not just for us, but I think it stokes imagination. And I mean, we talked about abstinence versus moderation. Like I want the experiences that technology can unlock to be encountered by people in ways that increase their capacity for things rather than diminish it. But I'm really excited about what is going to happen when we can figure out how to leverage AI and agents to actually advocates might be a loaded term in this type of context, but mm-hmm. like you actually have the ability to create environments that are dynamically suited for appropriate usage in a way that was like absolutely not capable for. There's probably new capacity for way worse, way more capture of attention that's not on even footing, but you actually have a really unique opportunity that we're exploring super deeply around just like, what does it mean for these environments to ascribe to the principles and the intentionality of the people that are using it.
Hmm. So we may end everything right here, but one more just kind of free shot. Is there anything else that you're learning or excited about? Or most of the folks that will be listening to this are people who are concerned for spiritual life, concerned for who they're becoming. That's kind of at the core of it. And wondering how technology intersects with that. Anything else, Royce, that you'd want to say or that you would suggest we all be thinking about?
I'm daily inspired by the people that are taking it upon themselves to figure out what the right way to occupy the digital spaces that we all exist in are. I think we're seeing like the birth of this new class of not just thought leader but also everyday person. And yes. I think we're building like techno philosophies in real time, and like we're all constructing. I truly don't know a person that doesn't have a really, if you ask them, doesn't have a really complex and thought out perspective on how the phones should be engaged with and how they are. And so I would say watching that transformation, I'm inspired by it. I'm seeing people come up with insanely creative ways to set up the right type of relationships with devices and then like pass them down. Like there's a good through line. And every time you make an investment in that, you're kind of moving the needle for the entire tribe a little bit. I don't know. That's how I'm thinking about it. Right now.
Like spiritual techno pioneers.
That's what we need. I don't know if that's a thing, but we're seeing it.
It's a thing now, baby.
Yeah.
Royce,
yeah.
This has been fabulous. I hope tons of people get to listen to this, get exposed to this. I hope that your work just mushrooms and impacts and helps people, parents, children to flourish. I am so, so grateful. And it's just been so much fun. You have a great gift for describing an infectious spirit around it. So, man, keep going and thank you.
Thank you, John. And thank you for your work and your words. If there's nothing else that I say today, it's like I hope you recognize some of what has come out of the words that you've spoken or facilitated over the years in the software we're building, because it's there.
Well, thank you. All right, brother. Take care.
All right. You too.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from John. You can also visit our website, becomenew.com, to access all of our videos there, or subscribe for the emails that go with each video. But my personal favorite way to stay in the loop with Become New is by text. We will send you a text message every morning that we release a new video with the title of that video and just the link to the video. So if you want that, you can text the word BECOME to the number 855-888-0444 and we'll get those messages to you. If you've got a prayer request, there's a group of us who meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, for 1 hour to pray for viewers just like yourself. So you can text or email us your prayer request at 855-888-0444 or at connect@becomenew.com. Remember, the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.